This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings, alongside Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. We're coast to coast, as always. Michael out there at his office in Jersey. I'm live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Got a jam-packed 2 hours on tap. Plenty of NFL mandatory minicamp news coming out. Burning questions for each of their respective teams throughout the course of the week that we will get through. A great guest list on tap today as well. Coming up in a half an hour, VSiN's own Will Hill will join us. We'll get some picks from him in the NBA Finals and beyond. Thomas Gable, sportsbook director at the Borgata in Atlantic City at the end of the hour. And in hour two, Claudia Bellafato joins us again. We've been cashing some tickets with her joining the program in the NBA and Stanley Cup Final. She's got some picks and props coming up for game three in that set. But Michael, the big question I feel like this time of year with mandatory minicamp is who's in, who's out, who cares? I know not our GM on the program. So can you tell people at home, I guess, why it's important or not that players are that are dealing with contract negotiations are available at the facility or not?
Well, I mean, I think it's a little bit ridiculous that teams actually think that, I mean, fans think that because CeeDee Lamb didn't attend the Cowboys, that Jerry Jones is going to lose sleep on his yacht as he sails through the Mediterranean this summer. I doubt it, right? And, you know, just because other guys don't show up, I don't think it's going to bother any team at all. I'm sure Kyle Shanahan's enjoying his Spanish vacation overseas with his wife, that he's not worried about Brandon Ayuk not being there. Look, it's old school in a bad way. There's some good old school. There's a lot of old school that is bad. In the old days, holdouts had long implications. There weren't the fines. Mm-hmm. The league set up a collective bargaining system that holdouts really are not relevant. Hold-ins have become relevant, not holdouts. So we'll see. So look, it's early. No team has won anything in the month of May or June. Nothing. I've never seen a trophy being handed out at this time of the year. It's remarkable, you know, but yet we need a lot to write about. We have to talk about something. And so we're going to talk about who's not there. What we should be focusing on is, how are these teams, instead of talking about how CeeDee Lamb's going to play, is what's the configuration of the Cowboys' offensive line and is it going to be good enough? What's Mike Zimmer's contribution to the defense going to look like as he comes back to be a coordinator after being a head coach for so long? Those are the fundamental questions that really we as a betting company, a betting network, and betting fans should really focus in on, because whether Lamb's there or not, it doesn't matter until week one when they get ready to start the season.
Yeah, I feel like with all of these teams that we're going to talk about here in a moment with their players who are or not showing up, there are so many other questions surrounding the team that are important this time of year, especially when we're trying to make our wagers. But let's go through, because it is newsworthy and noteworthy for the day, to take attendance here a little bit. I feel like when you're a little kid in school, and like, will Ja'Marr Chase, if you're here, please raise your hand, say present. And he apparently is out there in Cincinnati, by the way, despite pushing for a contract extension of his own. And while Chase is in the house, as expected, franchise tagged fellow wide receiver T. Higgins is not. Chase still has 2 years left on his rookie contract. He's set to make $1.055 million in base salary in 2024 and $21.8 million on the fifth-year option in 2025.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got nowhere. It's like Parsons showed up too, right? I mean, where's Micah going to go? Micah's tremendous. We'll talk about him later. His ability to rush the passer, pressure the quarterback. We'll see what Mike Zimmer does with him in terms of moving him from the A gap out to the C gap, back behind the line, all those things. But I think more than anything is, you know, when you have that option to be picked up on, that's a contract. So you're going to have to come in. Look, the one thing I do know about Mike Brown, Katie Brackburn Brown, they understand quality. The Bengals will pay a lot of money, as they did with Joe Burrow, for somebody they think is great. And I don't think they're going to argue that Chase isn't in that should be in the top three paid receivers in the league. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to argue that. I think they're going to relish paying that. And after all their blown draft picks over the career, you want to do that. I mean, as an executive, when you hit a three-run homer on a guy early in the draft, especially at wide receiver, you want to do that. Now, the issue comes into, and I think this is where I'm going to write about this tomorrow for VSiN, is it's wonderful that the cap's going up. It really is. But as the cap has gone up, And I've been motivated by your boy Tua. He's your boy now.
Okay.
Your boy Tua saying the market is the market, right? And the market is the market, but how does that affect the overall structure of your team? Can I tell you the top five teams in terms of quarterback expenditures this year? And you tell me, and you're going to laugh when I go through this. Okay. Number one is Cleveland. Number two is Dallas. Number three, this is the shocker, the New York Football Giants. Number four is the Rams, and he wants a raise. And number five is the mayor of Munchkin Land, and he's probably wants a raise too. Can you imagine that? Those are the top five quarterback salaries in terms of cash. And the difference between the mayor and Mahomes in terms of their cap number this year is $10 million. And my point here is you can pay Chase, you can pay Parsons, but if you're paying Prescott all the money, how do you pay everybody else? You have to make choices. I don't care how much the cap goes up. And so the last time a quarterback has controlled this much of the cap, you have to go back to Steve Young when we were in an uncapped year.
Well,
it doesn't work. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just saying I look forward to reading the article when that comes out tomorrow. And for any of our new listeners, just to jump in here real quickly, if you didn't know who the mayor of Munchkin Land is, it's Kyler Murray. So Daniel Jones and Kyler Murray in that top
I'm
five.
I'm sorry.
There. No, you're good.
Thank you.
I did.
At least you remembered what his name was.
I wanted to follow up on just one quick question because we do need to move on more players here. But considering Chase's prop numbers, 1,300.5 receiving yards, 8.5 receiving touchdowns are his number. Do you think this could be a good opportunity to buy in on some of his overs? Because last year, yes, his numbers took a dip, but didn't have Joe Burrow for a bulk of the season.
Yeah, no, I do. I think Chase is a legitimate guy who tilts the field. And I think he draws coverage. And I think that if Burrow's there, he's got to have a good year. Look, the one thing you know if you're putting – if you're betting on any of these receivers for the Bengals, you're betting on Higgins or Chase, is they're going to be in 11 personnel. They're going to be in three receivers, and the ball's coming out. And Burrow will get them the football. And so that's going to be critical. And so, you know, and as they go through this, the reason they don't want to – it's not that they don't like Higgins. The reason they don't want to extend Higgins beyond this year is the same thing. They know what they're paying Burrow. And the money they're going to have to give to Chase, they can't afford to give it out to another receiver.
The numbers for Chase, by the way, he soared over them his rookie season with 1,455 yards and 13 touchdowns. Year two was on pace too, but only got 12 games under his belt. So keep that in mind. Another important team that we need to talk about because it is a day ending in Y, which means we have the New York Jets to discuss here. Hassan Reddick is not at Jets minicamp, which I think that was largely expected given his contract situation. Aaron Rodgers also absent, though, which Robert Saleh did call an unexcused absence. He is missing for an event that was, quote, very important to him. Don't know any further details on that. But Saleh was asked by a reporter about the Hassan Reddick contract situation. Take a listen.
Hassan's not here because of his contract, I assume?
I don't know that. That's really for him and his agent to talk about.
He indicated when he was in Philadelphia that he wanted a new contract. I think that's what led to Philadelphia trading him. At the time of the trade, did he tell you guys he wanted a new deal here?
You know that... hate to put it on him, but that's
Joe.
That's a conversation that he would have had with Joe.
But Joe would indicate to you, Robert, right?
Not that I'm aware of, no. But he's been in multiple places and played at a high level at multiple places. He's a pro seasoned vet, and he's the last guy I'm worried about.
With Reddick, he did say that they did speak, by the way. So important to note, after last week saying they did not, he said they spoke this past weekend. Reddick is in a good place mentally, but he's choosing to sit this one out. Okay, you're laughing. Go ahead, Michael. Take over.
I would love to play poker with Saleh because he's got no poker face at all. Like zero. Like you could just know he's got no cards. He's got no hand, you know. And you talk to Joe Douglas if you like. I mean, look, he could say what he wants about Reddick. Philly got rid of Reddick for a reason. There's a reason Reddick's not on the Eagles, and it has a lot to do with his lack of play and his indulgence into wanting just to go up the field. And so, you know, they're going to have to fix that. Look, the Jets are a good team. Let's not kid ourselves. The Ifers have a lot of players if they stay healthy. But, you know, Rodgers, excused absence, get that. We don't know. I don't think there's anybody has a clue about Mike Williams, if he's going to be able to come back to even being close to player he once was. We don't know about this offensive line. So as we focus on Riddick, I will say this. I think Jet fans would agree. Their two best rushers last year were Franklin Myers, who's in Denver, and Huff, who's now in Philadelphia. And so even though that was the strength of their team, can that come back this year? We'll see.
Yeah, and clearly without Huff, you're going to need this piece there. Win total for the New York Jets set at 9.5, and despite having the longest active playoff drought in major professional sports, minus 160 to make the playoffs for the Jets this year. A surprise miss at mandatory minicamp was Amari Cooper. I feel like that's a name that we weren't hearing much about. Word last week in Tampa was that left tackle Tristan Wirfs would report to mandatory minicamp after skipping out on OTAs. He is there, and Gerard Mayo said yesterday the Patriots had full attendance, and that did include outside linebacker Matthew Judon, who's entering the final year of his contract and coming off major injury. I loved all the quotes from Judon, by the way, just saying, I ain't giving no money away. And he told a radio station in Boston recently that after last year and going through the process that he did with his contract that ultimately resulted in just a little tweak and he missed so much time, he said, I'm not worried about holding out, sitting out, or protesting because last year, quote, that stuff was trash. I'm not like that. I'm a football player.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. I mean, he's got to go out there and play. The problem is poor Matthew. They got to get the lead so he can rush the passer and use his skill set. Let's go back to Amari Cooper for a second. He's in the last year of a deal that pays him $20 million. He sees this receiver market where it is. Now, you know, the problem is he knows he's 30 years old. And I'm sure he doesn't want to go into the season and have to count on having production to get a new deal. We'll talk about it when he comes back.
Yeah, we're just getting started. More on that in a moment.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back here to the Lombardi Line. Get an in-depth betting preview of the U.S. Open with VSiN's golf betting experts on the Long Shots podcast this week. Our guys, Wes Reynolds, Matt Brown, and Kelly Bidlin, are breaking down every aspect of this year's toughest major, including, of course, their best bets. The new episode drops today, or you can check out the show here on VSiN tomorrow at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. I saw Kelly Bidlin walking through the studio this morning, getting ready to record. He is suited and booted and ready to go. Welcome back to the show. We are live on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And as we were going to get into this segment anyways, Michael, we got burning questions that we're going to continue to go through throughout the course of the week with all of these teams that are entering mandatory minicamp. We got 22 of them getting underway this week. We were talking about the Cleveland Browns, and they're one of those teams, and we're adding Amari Cooper to the list of wide receivers who is not showing up. So I want you to be able to finish your thought that we were getting into before the break as it pertains to his situation.
Well, considering Amari, you know, last year he had a breakout season. You know, I mean, it was really remarkable considering the interchanging of quarterbacks. I mean, he started 15 games. He missed two, which he typically tends to do. Averaged 17.4 yards per catch, had five touchdowns. His percentage of catch was high. And, you know, now he's going to be 30 years old. And having that kind of year, much like Ayuk, he wants a new deal. And I'm sure every receiver in the league, whether it's Cortland Sutton, whether it's Amari Cooper, they're looking around at this market saying, wait a minute, Calvin Ridley got what? You know, I mean, this guy, I'm better than him. I should get this. And this isn't a knock on Calvin Ridley at all. It's just that this is what happens when receivers, one guy makes money, everybody else wants it. So they're going to have to figure it out. Now, their problem is, you know, they've already are the 10th highest paid team in allocation for wide receiver money. They just paid Jerry Jeudy money too. They've got Elijah Moore on the team, who was a second round pick on a rookie deal. But, you know, how do you keep doing all this if you're going to pay, especially considering the quarterback is the highest percentage of player by a long shot in eating the cap of money?
No doubt about it. And that's where I want to go for my burning question as it pertains to the Cleveland Browns here, because the guy getting him the ball is trying to come back healthy. There's obviously going to be major questions about his shoulder. Even when he was available on the field last year, it wasn't great from what we saw. He is nowhere close to the version of the Texans quarterback in 2020 that was unbelievable. So my burning question, how is Deshaun Watson going to progress, and is he capable of returning to that form? Because I personally don't know.
I don't, you know, and I'm going to plead ignorance here. I don't know either, because they've done everything this offseason to accommodate Deshaun Watson. I mean, Kevin Stefanski's no longer calling plays. He won coach of the year. Now, they gave him a new contract, and that's great. But he's no longer calling plays because Watson wasn't comfortable with the offense. And that's hard for me to understand, because if you were to ask me what offense would Deshaun Watson be really good in, I would have said the Kubiak play action pass, over routes, throw it down the field. Because when he had success, when he was playing really well at his time in Houston, he was throwing the ball. I mean, you know, there was a time where, you know, he was making a lot of great throws up the field. And when he got to Cleveland, those throws weren't making them. Now, Joe Flacco came in and made them. Let's not kid ourselves, right? Joe Flacco came in. Will Fuller used to make them when he was in Houston. I mean, in Houston, when he was really humming and going, I mean, he was averaging almost 8-9 yards per attempt. Last year, the last 2 years in Cleveland, he was at 6'5". His 4 years, think about this, Stormy, his 4 years in Houston, he averaged 8'3", 8'2", 7'8", and 8'9". That's remarkable. And the 2 years in Cleveland where he's played 12 games, he's averaged 6'5". Yeah. Like, what has happened to the guy? His eye level's down. He doesn't throw the ball effectively. He throws, you know, he's thrown 14 touchdown passes and 9 interceptions in 2 years.
Yeah, to your point, he used to make a lot of great throws. Now he makes a lot of money for doing average at best, I guess. Exactly. We could say. And that's being complimentary. The win total for the Cleveland Browns this year set at 8.5. Let's go kind of a little bit quicker, rapid fire style for this next handful of teams, starting with the Buffalo Bills. How will the Bills offense look now that there's no more Stephon Diggs, there's no more Gabe Davis, and you have a full-time offensive coordinator in Joe Brady, who had to step in to that role last season as the new Bills offensive coordinator?
Well, they're a 12 team, and if you want to play fantasy football, take Dalton Kincaid as a fantasy guy, because he's going to get the ball a ton. He's their number one receiver. He's going to get it. They're going to be a 12 team. They're going to run the ball. They're going to play action, but that's who they are. The questions for Buffalo aren't offensive. I know the media makes that out to be. The questions for Buffalo, are they good up front? Are they good enough in the defensive line to win games? Everybody in Buffalo, in terms of the coaches, that's what they're worried about. In terms of the media, we're worried about who the receiver is. The receiver is going to be Kincaid.
I love that. And a big Dalton Kincaid fan, and I'm writing that down as a reminder for fantasy football, because that's the only thing that I GM, Michael, and I'm ready and willing to jump on that one. How about the Carolina Panthers? This is a team that obviously I have belief in going into this year, but the big question naturally is, will Bryce Young have more success this year under Dave Canales and an expensive offensive line? Is that line going to live up to what they're getting paid?
Well, they have to, right? And they've invested in a line coach and invested in talent. So to me, the answer to the question is yes, he will be a better player because they'll protect him better. They will protect him. Canales will get rid of the ball. There'll be more of a rhythm. They'll be coached. In fairness to Bryce Young, he wasn't coached last year. And I think this team has more talent. I mean, Trimble's a good tight end. They've got a tight end. You know, they got to get another playmaker at receiver to go along with Dante Johnson. But look, if they can get this offensive line to play at a decent level and coached and work within concert of one another, they got a chance to be improved. And Bryce Young will be improved. I promise you that.
Yeah, they brought in Deonte Johnson, as you referenced. They drafted Xavier Leggett, who, by the way, best interviews on the internet. If you haven't seen them, you got to go watch them. But it seems like they did all of these offseason moves have been about making Bryce Young better. It's just a matter of if ultimately, once we get onto the football field, that happens. And you'll notice, as we had that graphic up on the screen a moment ago, the Panthers' win total went from 4.5 to now 5.5. So they have gotten a little bit of that over love. We talked a lot about the Cincinnati Bengals and the Jamar Chase, T. Higgins situation. But the question I think is on everybody's mind is, how is Joe Burrow healing? And we've seen those reports about the specific type of wrist injury that he had and the way that that heals, and if he's going to be able to be the 100% version of Joe Burrow that we've come to know and love and that the odds expect him to be. This is a team with a win total over 10.5. They're the second shot in the AFC North behind only the Ravens, who had the best record in football last year. Third shot to win the AFC, tied for fifth in the Super Bowl odds at 12-1. So what kind of Joe Burrow do you anticipate us getting? And is he a durable quarterback? Can he show that he is?
I can't answer that. I have no idea if he's durable. He seems to get a lot of hand injuries, which has to worry you. But I do think this is a good team. Look, they've got to get Trent Brown to be in shape, or Amarius Mims, who they drafted in the first round. They got to get him to play at a high level. That's the concern. The right tackle. Look, I'm not in love with Orlando Brown at left tackle. I think he's a solid player, good player, not elite. They paid him like that. I think he's a better right than left. But look, Moss ran the ball really effectively. Chase Brown was a good change of pace back. It's really, Burrow should be healthy. I'm assuming it's going to go to plan. I think, to me, this is a good team. I think this is the team to beat in the North this year because they'll play an easier schedule. They're playing the easier schedule of the four of the other three teams. They finish in last place, and they're going to be much better defensively. Just the addition of having Geno Stone and Von Bell back at the secondary. I think we lose so much sight of when the middle of the defense can't communicate. On every level, from the linebacker to the safety, things fall apart. And last year, that was the perfect example that happened in Cincinnati. They had no communication. They gave up way too many plays.
My burning question for the Denver Broncos, will Bo Nix prove Sean Payton right? What do you think?
I would say yes, because Sean Payton calls plays. It's like, you know, if you want to make a guy look good, you can make him look good. And I think he'll make him look good. And look, I will say this about Bo Nix. When you watch Bo and the play broke down, he was good on the move. He could make second plays, third plays, which Russell never was able to do anymore. So, yeah, I think he'll make him look good. I think that win total's way too low. They'll be well coached. I really believe that. His second year, they're going to get better.
Yeah, won 8 games last year. Win total this season set at 5.5. A little juice on the over, -135. But Nix, we know, the most experienced quarterback in college football history. He set NCAA record 61 games, all-time leading passer in college football, set a single-season record last year for completion percentage. And you mentioned the athleticism, which I think is a little bit underrated with him, that if he follows and does what Sean Payton asks, he could be in a very good situation. I think he's being doubted a little bit too much here. Unfortunately, we have to take a break here. I'm looking at their schedule, though, real quickly. Mixed bag. Far from easy, though. Chiefs twice in the AFC West, unknowns largely with the Chargers and Raiders, and they have the NFC South and the AFC North, plus the Jets and Colts. So the schedule's not easy. I still think I agree with you, though, that 5.5 feels like it is a little bit too low, because they can sneak a few by, right? Like, you win games you're not expected to win sometimes.
I think they're going to beat the Raiders eventually. I don't think Sean Payton's I think he thinks he's going to win two of those games, and now he's got to win three more somewhere else. We'll see. They didn't beat the Raiders last year.
No NFL with Will Hill when he joins us coming up next, but he does have a CFL play, which is sneaky. Don't worry, though. We're talking NBA Finals and a whole lot more with Will.
That?
He knows it all. He's got it all. Michael, we'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Help me help you start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription, because right now at VSiN, guys, you can upgrade to the Pro annual subscription for just $199, which is down from that regular price we're always telling you about, $240 plus. This time around, we're throwing in an extra month absolutely free. With a VSiN Pro subscription, you'll get exclusive access to our premium analysis, expert picks, and advanced betting tools that'll give you an upper hand all year long. And here's the big news. Our NFL betting guide is coming out later this month. This guide is your ultimate one-stop shop resource for the football season, packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, and of course, best bets from all of our hosts for the upcoming season. Don't miss out on this limited time deal. Visit vsin.com/subscribe now. You got to use our promo code Lombardi, though, in order to claim the discount and bonus month. That's vsin.com/subscribe, promo code Lombardi. This is the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome into the show now on the Progressive Guest Line. Will Hill, host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast. You can also catch him on the Bear Bets pod with Chris Felica. VSiN contributor fills in and hosts this show every now and then. What's going on, Will? How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Yeah, use that promo code Lombardi. Use the promo code Sunday Bet Prep. Doesn't matter which promo code, however you want to spell it. But happy to be on with you guys. What's going on?
Listen, we're trying to wheel and deal our promo code here, okay? Don't try to promote other shows
on
this program.
We need the credit for it. Yeah, Stormy, back him off. We need credit for it. We're going to get in trouble if we don't.
I don't know if Stormy talked about this yesterday. I heard some of the show, not all of it. What a call by Stormy doing the UFL semifinal right before it happened, she gives out, it was a 15-1 or 11-1 first touchdown score, and a play later it hits. So congratulations. I didn't get a text message, which is unfortunate. I thought we were friends, but I hope you feel good about yourself. That was a hell of a call.
I apologize, Will. I was in game mode, and when I made the pick initially and put it out there, it was 15-1. It closed 11-1. But either way, a good bet. And I said yesterday on the show, Will, I've officially peaked as a sports betting broadcaster. Like, it does not get better or smoother than that moment. So thank you. I appreciate it. I'm hoping that we can cash some big money tickets with you now on the program today. We got lots to get into with the NBA Finals ongoing. I know you've got an NBA draft pick upcoming, a CFL play, which leave it to you, of course. But let's start in the NBA Finals. Game 2, obviously, in the books. Game 3, things shifting to Dallas. And you are leaning, taking the points here with the team that's up 2-0. Why?
Yeah, it's just hard to watch the first two games and imagine you're getting points with one of these teams, and it's not Dallas. It's such a bad matchup, I think, for Dallas. Boston can really just put a good three-point shooter and a good defender at every position on the court at all times. And, you know, if Kyrie's going to play this poorly, and I would imagine he plays a little bit better, I mean, you're talking about 6 of the 8 best players, maybe 6 of the 7 best players if you're getting this version of Kyrie on Boston, and they've walled off everything on the rim. They're really defending the perimeter well. And the concerning thing, you could say, hey, Dallas is going to shoot the three better. Maybe they're not a great shooting team to begin with. Outside of Luka and Kyrie when he's on, there's not a lot of great shooters. But outside of the percentages, the thing that's concerning for Dallas is the attempts. Boston's gotten up 81 attempts. Dallas, I think, has gotten up 54, where sometimes the attempts are just almost as important as the makes. It's almost like taking deep shots in football where, hey, if you're not getting the attempts up there, it's hard to get enough makes. And Boston's getting the attempts up and Dallas isn't. So I don't know. Maybe Dallas gets a game in Dallas. I don't think they're getting both. I think it's much more likely Boston gets both in Dallas. And then throw in the fact, and look, I've been fooled by this before, throw in the fact Luka just doesn't look healthy. He wasn't moving great. I know he's going to put up the numbers. He's going to hit shots. He's got such just a feel for making the shots, but he wasn't moving well. And if you're going to get a compromised Luka, man, it's amazing the luck Boston's had with these opponent injuries, but they don't have to apologize. I don't know. I just think this is going to be Boston getting one, if not both of these games here in Dallas.
And Holiday is the MVP plus 800. I mean, before it started, it was 35-1. But I think it's pretty clear, you know, he doesn't get enough credit for all the things he does. I mean, I don't understand how Tatum is still the favorite to be the MVP when you look at his numbers and his shot volume compared to what he's produced. But I like this Holiday MVP one. What was your thought behind it?
Yeah, he was 100-1 at some books, 120-1 at some other books after game one. I totally agree. I don't see any path for Tatum to win this award. My doggo Henry saying hi to you guys. Kids getting off the bus.
I was going to say, he's got his own picks he's trying to give out. That's what that is.
He sure is. He wants the attention. to me, Holiday, look, it fits the narrative. First of all, he's a really good player. He's playing well on offense, playing well on defense. But it fits the narrative because there's a narrative that, hey, the Celtics, they fall short. They're not clutch. Well, now you bring in Holiday, who hasn't been on the team the past few years that have fell short, and he's kind of the missing piece. He won a championship with the Bucks. Plus, he's a good guy. People seem to like him. You know, I think a lot adds up here. Plus, Jaylen Brown already won his award in the conference final. So I think right now it would be a toss-up between Brown and Holiday. You're getting almost 8-1 with Holiday. I think that's a good bet. And, hey, if you think, you know, Boston's going to win sooner rather than later, that really eliminates some of the chance for Tatum and these other guys to get back in the race. So I think Holiday's a good bet. Holiday, by the way, had one of the funnier lines. I don't know if you guys saw this. Yeah, I think he said after game one or game two, he said, "We're so good on defense, even our white guys can defend," which was pretty funny. He said it with a straight look on his face, too. But I think Holiday's very live in this market.
I didn't hear that, but that's good. And I agree with you. It seems like through two games, he's the clear leader in the clubhouse. And if you think it's going to be a short set, as you anticipate, then that's going to leave less opportunity for some of these other guys to creep in there. The NBA draft is also coming up at the end of this month, and you're getting ahead of some of the props there as well. Who are you going with for first pick?
Yeah, I think Klingon is live. That number is starting to move. I'm seeing some 9-1. I think DraftKings says 7-1. That was 15-1 a couple days ago. You're not getting the best number, but this might be a scenario where this is like 2-1, even money on draft day, because it's just such a weird draft where a couple things. You hear people that study the draft, they say the best player in this draft would be like the 8th, 9th best player in another draft. Yeah. So this is not one where you have to go to consensus. You have to think inside the box. You can kind of just pick whoever you like and not worry about the blowback, because there's no blowback. There's no, oh my God, I can't believe you passed on this guy or that guy. You can just kind of pick whoever you want and get away with it. And the other thing that makes it weird is Atlanta's a strange team because they're kind of in between. They're not contending. They're not rebuilding. They've got Young and Murray, but they might trade one of them. So I don't know. Quinn Snyder coached Rudy Gobert in Utah. Klingon, we at least know he's going to protect the rim. He's going to defend. He's going to rebound. That's at least one skill you can hang your hat on where these other guys, look, we don't know a lot about them. They're international guys. They're younger. Klingon's at least one guy. He can help you. He can help you right away, and he's not going to be a total bust. So I think at 7-8-1, whatever the best number you can find, I think Klingon's live to go first here because it's a line of the Sopranos. Nobody knows anything. Nobody knows anything about these players. I don't think Sarge, who's the favorite, is any lock to be the first pick. I think this is pretty much anybody's guess. I think Klingon's as good as anybody's guess.
Speaking of anyone's guess, the Rough Riders, I call them the Rough Riders. I didn't realize they changed their name to the Red Blacks, but they're in Ottawa nonetheless. 4 years they haven't won anything. They're trying to turn things around. They haven't played a game yet. They're the only team, and I can't figure out why they haven't, but you actually like them and the points. Like, where are you getting this tape? Were you watching them in the preseason? And like, what makes you believe that you could put your money behind them?
How about this? They get a bye in week one. I am not in charge, despite what you think. I am not in charge of the CFL schedule. They get a bye in week one. But I think that's an advantage. They've had all training camp to get ready for Winnipeg. Winnipeg already played a game. They did not look good. They only scored 12 points at home. I think they're an older team. They lost the Grey Cup last year. They might be past their prime with a lot of veterans. Ottawa is getting 7 at home. Winnipeg, like I said, could not move the ball last week, only threw for 200 yards. So I think this will be a closer game. I wouldn't be shocked if Ottawa beats them. I think this is a situation that really favors Ottawa. Give me Ottawa plus 7. It's starting to move at 6.5. There are some 7s out there, so make sure you get the full 7. But I think Ottawa's live here.
Line movement in Canada. Yeah. I mean, who doesn't love line movement in Canada, Stormy? Don't you love line movement?
I love the CFL. The best thing about CFL is when it's on, you know NFL is not far around the corner.
That's a good point. That's true. But yes, we got Will Hill over here moving numbers in the CFL. And great names, by the way. Red Blacks, Blue Bombers. Doesn't get much more fun than that. We mentioned Donovan Klingon, obviously UConn. The news of the day yesterday in the NBA was Danny Hurley, UConn head coach, turning down the Los Angeles Lakers job. And I mean, I know that you are head advisor to Jeannie Buss. Like, how should she be handling this situation? What's going on over there?
I object to your use of the word news. Was it news? I mean, if I announce on Tuesday that Michael Lombardi might be leaving VSiN to run for president, and then I announce on Thursday that he's staying with VSiN, did I give out 2 scoops or did I give out 0 scoops? This was very strange. I mean, April was the last time the Lakers played a game. April was the last time UConn played a game. Neither of these teams had played in forever. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, June 6th, all right, Lakers and Hurley, there's a lot of interest. It's going to happen. It's going to happen soon. Then a couple days later, it falls through. I don't know. Seems like Woj got a scoop.
Fake
his buddy
news.
Hurley got raided.
Will Hill is calling it fake news. I love it. Hurley, I think he's right. We're going to talk about it in the next hour. I mean, you know, first of all, what never made sense to me, Will, is – if you're trying to get Danny Hurley, why are you making him the fifth highest paid coach in the league? Like, how is that possible? Like, what are we doing here? Like, seriously, I mean, you're not going to make him the highest paid coach?
Is this all UConn leverage then, Will?
And why did this happen June 5th? They've both been done playing since April. All of a sudden, June 5th, you wake up and, all right, we're going to hire Hurley. We're going to offer him all this money, which they didn't end up offering him. I think Woj wanted a scoop, and I think Hurley wanted a raise, and both people, you know, scratch each other's back. And when Woj was breaking the news, you could see over his shoulder his book about Hurley's dad. There's a lot at play. It all amounted to nothing. He gave us some content, but
Hurley gets leverage. The Lakers say, hey, we tried. Now let's go hire the guy with no experience in JJ Redick, because that's who LeBron wanted all along. Okay, thanks, Will. We'll see you next week.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on the Lombardi Line, guys, we are this close to crowning an NBA champ. And with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use our code VSIN. That's code VSIN, V-S-I-N, for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you just bet $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. And to help us find out where the money is moving, how people are betting, a couple of the massive events that are coming up in the NBA and Stanley Cup respective finals, as well as the U.S. Open. Welcome him. Thomas Gable, director of the race and sports book at the Borgata in Atlantic City via the Progressive guest line. And TG, I do want to start with the U.S. Open here, because this whole PGA Tour season has felt like it is Scottie Scheffler and everybody else. And we're seeing a massively low number on Scheffler as an outright winner of just about every sports book that I've looked at. And from your standpoint, when people are betting an event like this, do they pick a long shot and pick a player that they would normally select and then also throw a little bit on Scottie Scheffler? Like, is that the way that you're seeing people approach this? Or I feel like it's a very unique season and tournament with the way that Scheffler is just dominated.
No, an excellent question, Stormy, because you hit the nail on the head. This is unbelievable. You have to go back to Tiger, right? In Tiger's prime, when you would see a number this low, a price this low on a favorite going into a major. It's really incredible when you're seeing Scheffler priced around 3-1. I'm at plus 325. I actually saw some books less than $3. Wow. So it's pretty amazing that we're heading into the U.S. Open and that's where the favorite is priced at. But it just comes down to how dominant he has been this year. And, you know, it probably took an arrest there to keep him out of the PGA Championship's winner's circle for that traffic incident there. But this is now we're heading into the national championship here. Piner's number two. It's going to play fast and firm. It's going to be hot there. I don't think they're calling for much in terms of humidity. And we know the USGA, when they set up these U.S. Open courses, that they like to run these courses up on the stimp meter, the greens on the stimp meter. They never announce officially what the stimp meter runs, but it's fast. So the thing about Pinehurst, Bill Corn, Brendan Crenshaw, they kind of reestablished that original sand and wiregrass border around the fairways in 2010 when they redid it. And it goes back to the original design there from Donald Ross. And he has these turtleback greens, which are essentially, if you look at an upside down bowl, that's the way the greens are. And when they're running fast, depending where the USGA sets up pin positions, you could have some really heinous pin positions there for players. So you're going to see shots played here similar to shots you would see on links courses, keeping shots low, letting them run up. All those waste areas may not be as tough as traditional thick, high U.S. Open rough. And, you know, it's going to end up being a crapshoot on where your ball will end up if you miss the fairway and just how much club you can get on it when it's in kind of this waste area, so to speak. So players who have good short games, imaginative short games, they should be able to pick up some shots on the field here. But with Scheffler priced, you know, basically around the 3-1 range, maybe you could get a little bit higher. And the betting activity around him is also fascinating, because we looked like last weekend at the Memorial, which he won. Same thing. I mean, despite the price, and I keep saying this almost every time Scheffler plays in a tournament, the price on him is prohibitive. It doesn't seem to matter to the bettors at this point. Everybody has continued to bet him. Last week, same thing. He had the most handle written on him, most bets on him. And same thing this week, despite him being plus 325 here, he has the most handle written on him. He has the most bets taken on him. So while people are probably going to sprinkle some other players there, almost everybody is taking a piece of Scheffler here. Now, obviously you can kind of get creative and play him in different ways, not just outright winner market. You can take him in matchups. You can take him in, you know, top 10, top five. It just seems like everybody who's coming in, no matter if they are taking somebody at a higher price, they're also taking a piece of Scheffler as well.
And so we know that the greens are like giant bowls. The bunkers are like giant bowls, and the heat and humidity will be a factor. And the ball, it will, even though the course is really long, it will play, because you're going to get a lot of bounces because it's a hard track. There's not a lot of rain down there. So if you were to pair somebody with Scheffler, would it be DeChambeau? Never for me. Would it be Ricky Fowler, never for me? Would it be like, who would it be that you would say, okay, I'm going to bet this guy kind of two for one, put them both 1-2 in the category to see who to give yourself a chance along with Scheffler?
Well, yeah, because of the way that these the greens are, and listen, guys are going to be missing greens, and there's chipping and putting is going to be such an important piece here this weekend, as it always is. But this week in particular for U.S. Open, the short game, really, really the importance comes in. I think you have to look at somebody, Michael, who is good in scrambling. So Schauffele, and he's been in obviously very good form recently. So Xander Schauffele, I would take a look at. He's currently 11-1. The one guy, though, that I think shouldn't be overlooked here is Hideki Matsuyama. Another good guy around the greens, been playing pretty well, and you can get a pretty good price on him, 45-1 right now. At most of the market, you can get him in that range. So Matsuyama is not somebody that I think you should overlook, too. He's probably worth some money on.
Thomas Gable, sportsbook director at the Borgata in Atlantic City, joining us here on the Lombardi Line. When it comes to the NBA and Stanley Cup respective finals, we see teams on both sides that are up 2-0. And I know historically that game three at home bounce back from the team that had been on the road the previous games, that's typically a spot where bettors like to jump in and say, okay, this team's going to rebound at home. Are you seeing that, or has the mentality shifted a bit because of the way that both the Boston Celtics and Florida Panthers have won their respective opening two games?
Well, in terms of game three for both sports, yes. It's been the Oilers and it's been the Mavs that when you look at the bet splits, that's who the bets are coming in on. Now, in game two for the NHL, the Panthers We're taking a decent amount of money in that. We needed the Oilers to come through there in game two. Didn't happen. For the NBA game two, everybody kind of expected a bounce back for the Mavs in game two. And, you know, when you looked at game one, Boston got out to that huge lead in the first quarter, and then things kind of settled down there. And the Mavs played a lot closer of a game in the second, third, and fourth quarters. So everybody was betting the Mavericks, it seemed. Now, obviously, the number became very, very important in that game. If you took the 7.5 where we opened it, then, okay, you got paid. Everybody who had the 7 ended up getting a push, and then those who bet the closing line, Mavs plus 6.5, you ended up losing that bet. And sort of, I guess, a little bit of some bad luck there at the end. Dallas didn't foul, but ended up Boston running out the clock and the game landing on 7. We did very well in the game. Could have done better if the Mavs had fouled there and put the Celtics on the line, but all good. But yeah, it was just interesting because everybody seemed to think that Dallas was going to have this bounce back spot in game two. And now game three is kind of shaping up in the betting market the same way. Everybody is looking at the Mavs to bounce back here, especially at home. They didn't obviously shoot particularly well there in Boston. Kyrie has not looked good at all. And whether or not that's because of the history that he has there with the Boston fans, and, you know, maybe he's in his head a little bit, I don't know. But getting back home here, I think, for Dallas probably do them a bit of good, because right now it just seems to be Luka and nobody else. All the guys, all the role players that had stepped up previously in those other playoff series, they've been MIA so far in the first two games here. So obviously both teams here, Dallas and Edmonton, they're kind of must-win spots here. And, you know, give credit, though, to Florida and Boston. They did what they had to do. They helped serve at home, and now they get to go on the road up 2-0. So obviously very, very important games, 3 and 4 coming up here in both series. And, you know, from a betting perspective, obviously we want to see both series get extended. We want the opportunity to book more games on both these series, but both teams here coming up at home need to step up.
Yeah, I mean, from a fan standpoint in general, I felt like we deserved long series, and then it appears that that is probably most likely not how things are going to play out. TG, you are awesome. Thank you so much for the time, my friend.
Thanks,
all
TG.
Right. Thank you, guys.
Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata. I wanted seven in both. Not looking like that's the case, though. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.